You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Hey, happy Valentine's Day. Happy Friday to you. We got a lot to get to today on our show. Arkansas baseball opening its season today over at Baumwalker Stadium. We'll talk about that series with Washington State a little bit later, but we kick off with Joel Lenardi of ESPN, the famed bracketologist, to talk about the Razorbacks and where they stand now after this run where they've won four of their last six games. Joe, first off, thanks for being with us. Where do you place Arkansas right now?
Yeah, new bracket came out this morning, Friday, Valentine's Day, and there are the Hogs, last four in, 14 SEC teams. No one would have thought this possible, but the games keep breaking not only the SEC's way, but in this example, Arkansas's way. And, oh my goodness, what a story if it comes to pass.
What have you seen from Arkansas the last couple of weeks that gives you confidence to put them in your bracket?
Well, I think beating teams at the top of the bracket, as they've done here, is certainly the most important thing. You know, you beat Alabama, you beat Kentucky on the road. The X and O part, I'll leave to other people, but it certainly seems that maybe the rotation is a way that Cal likes it. You know, some are saying maybe there's a little addition by subtraction going on there. I'm not there every day, so I don't know. But, you know, I can only judge the results and the games that I see. And it's working for them right now. And if they can just be, you know, on the right side of 500 the rest of the way, including the SEC tournament, I think they're going to sneak in.
You've been doing this for a long time. Does it feel weird to see a John Calipari coach team on the bubble? You don't have a lot of experience with that.
That's a great question. Has it ever happened? I guess there was one year where Kentucky was, you know, got hot late and was an 8-9 in the first round and went to the Final Four. That was the Harrison twins. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, they were probably on the bubble for a stretch of February, but by Selection Sunday, they were safe. Yeah, I don't know that I've associated Cal and the bubble. And, you know, frankly, had I done so, he probably would have called me and you know, given me a little Paisan slap.
Arkansas's got a couple of games this week, Joe. They are in the next week against top 10 teams on the road. They go to A&M on Saturday. They play at Auburn next week. If they were able to pull out a win in either of those, what does that do for their resume?
I think a split there would be heaven sent. And, I mean, how many road games in that league aren't top 10? Maybe not by the poll, but certainly by the net and by ranking and by placement in the bracket. You know, a road game at South Carolina, the last place team in the league, is quad one. Hmm. Like, that has never happened. It's never come close to happening. The real story is the SEC nationally this year, in my opinion. And, you know, look, the seed list today, four of the top five teams are from the SEC. There's another two on the three line. There's two on the four. I mean, it's almost impossible to build a bracket following all of the bracketing rules to avoid SECs playing each other. Mm-hmm. And you know, Arkansas is a big piece of that, but they're a small part of the larger story. Now, do I think they'll end up with 14 a month from now on Selection Sunday? Almost certainly not, because every time there's a league game, somebody has to lose, right? But I've been saying that for 6 weeks, and the bid number keeps going up, not down. Personally, I don't think Georgia's going to make it. I just don't think they're quite good enough. Whereas Arkansas, to me, is good enough, and it just took a while for that to manifest itself.
So you've got 14 teams. You said you don't think 14 will make it, but I think 11 is the record, right? 11 teams.
Oh, yeah, they're going to blow by that. They're going to blow by that. Why? I just don't – like, Georgia could slip out. Arkansas obviously could slip out. Mm-hmm. And Texas or Oklahoma, I think, but not both, could slip. And Vandy. But I mean, history would say that no, that half of those teams will slip out. Because, again, whenever somebody's losing, somebody's winning.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to set, if the record is 11, I'm going to set the over and under at 11.5, and I'm going to take the over.
You know, the SEC, and you've heard Calipari say this a number of times, where he said, you know, I used to bang on the table and say six teams should get in, but in reality, I thought it probably should be like two or three. Like, could you have, you've been doing this for so long, where you've seen years where it's been very thin in the SEC. Does it, do you ever just take a step back and say, this is kind of crazy that this conference is the one that's having this type of success in basketball?
Yes, it's extraordinary. But, you know, in a way, just like think about this like in some kind of corporate way for a second, right? Like, here is an alliance of mammoth schools with mammoth programs and mammoth resources that only in the very modern era of college basketball has decided to really care about college basketball, right? Outside of, you know, Kentucky and maybe one or two others, where basketball was the religion before or equal to football. But I mean, these schools now, if you look at them as businesses, they've realized that there's a good amount of money to be made in basketball as well.
Mm-hmm.
And they've invested in coaches, facilities, now NIL, everything else. And the fact that it's paying off to this degree is certainly something that no one could have expected or predicted and would have a hard time repeating. But, you know, in America, when the most profitable entities invest in new product lines, sometimes they do really, really well because of the brand recognition and market share of those products. And you know, that's my macroeconomic hat look at the whole thing. But, I mean, this is Gordon Gekko. Greed is good.
How strong of a year is it for the bubble?
I think it's average to maybe slightly above average.
Okay.
Everybody says every year that the bubble is bad or the bubble is terrible. And like my argument is, of course there are flawed teams on the bubble with questionable resumes. If they weren't questionable, they wouldn't be on the bubble. They'd be safely into the field. So, you know, I'm not knocking anybody or anything for that. I think it's pretty decent. I mean, if Arkansas is a bubble team, you know, how many bubble teams beat Kentucky and Alabama back to back? Like, you know, you've got some teams that are playing their way in, you got some teams that are playing their way out, and some others that just can't get out of their own way. That's, to me, that's not bad. That's average.
So on your bracket right now, you've got Arkansas playing San Diego State in a first four game. I've always been curious about this. How are those teams chosen for the first four? I understand that they're bubble teams, but
yeah,
it seems like there's maybe a little bit of they're chosen indiscriminately.
No, it's not indiscriminate.
Okay.
This year there are 37 at-large positions out of the 68 teams. Usually it's 36. And 32 automatic qualifiers, but we don't have a Pac-12.
Mm-hmm.
So the 32 goes down to 31.
Mm-hmm.
And the at-large number goes from 36 to 37. And they will rank, once selected, all 68 teams in the field, regardless of their path, whether they're at-larges or automatics. And the last four from each category, the last four automatics and the last four at-larges will play in the first four in Dayton.
Okay.
So teams on the at-large side, 34, 35, 36, and 37, have to play in, essentially, as do teams 65, 66, 7, and 8.
So, you know, you mentioned...
So that's... It's just math.
So you mentioned this earlier, you know, hey, yeah, the tournament, the NCAA, they want to keep teams from the same conference from playing, you know, I think ideally till the Elite Eight. And then you mentioned they may not be able to avoid that this year with the SEC. What happens if you've got, say, two or three SEC teams that are going to the first four and you can't avoid that? I don't know that we've ever seen anything like that before.
Yeah, there are rules for that. We've had multiple teams from the same league in the first four a couple of times. And in this mock today that you're referencing, both Georgia and Arkansas are there. Mm-hmm. And they can't play each other. They just can't play each other. And if there were three, which could happen, theoretically, what they would do is they would look and see who played each other the least. Right? Because theoretically, two teams from the same league could play once, twice, or even three times prior to NCAA play, depending on their conference tournament or what their regular season schedule is. So if it was Arkansas, Georgia, and I don't know, Oklahoma, they would see of the possible combinations who played the fewest, and they would start with that and try and kind of reverse engineer that piece of the bracket accordingly.
We hear a lot about net rankings. What other metrics do you think are important to the selection committee?
I think it starts and ends with Quad One, and for the unfamiliar, that a team's wins and losses are put into four different buckets, Quads 1, 2, 3, and 4, based upon the net rankings of those opponents, with Quad One representing, you know, the top of the heap, essentially top 50 type teams. And that number slides based on, you know, the site of a game. Like Quad One is 1 to 30 if you're playing at home. It's 1 to 50 if you're playing neutral. 1 to 75 if it's on the road because it's harder to win on the road, et cetera. So, you know, they're looking hard at how did you do against other teams that are at the same NCAA tournament level.
Joe, we'll get you out of here on this. Every year, you know, selection committee, there are surprises, I guess, we'll put it that way, or it feels like there's
we try
surprises.
To limit them.
You try to, but it doesn't always happen. And it doesn't matter what sport you're talking about. Anytime there's a selection committee, it seems like there's a surprise or two that's out there. I wonder, how much do you look at, maybe you go back and analyze what they did, and that helps your analysis moving forward for how you pick teams?
Well, you'd be foolish not to, right? If you know, in any endeavor, we try to learn from our mistakes, if you will. And, you know, I go back, not instantly, because I don't sleep much that stretch near selections, but I'll go back, you know, after the tournament or late in the tournament. Sometimes it's that week in between the Sweet 16 and the Final Four, you know, where you have, like, you go from there, you know, that's a kind of a dead week, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, say, hey, all right, you know, they took, let's say, last year, I didn't have Virginia and I had Oklahoma. So I'll go back and look at those two and say, all right, what did I miss or what did they miss? Right? Like a lot of times, if I'm honest with myself, I'll say, hey, I can see what they were thinking here. And maybe it goes in the back of your head next time to look at column 6 or whatever it was that maybe made the difference. And sometimes, man, I'll just say, yeah, you know what? They were wrong. Like I was on it, and if I could sit in the conference room with them, I would make this argument or point this out. But we're talking about differences that are so fine that very rarely are they like so far different from, you know, my or anybody else's selections that will go, that is just, they just kicked it. Mm-hmm. They kicked a rock. They got it wrong. And, you know, there's been a handful of them over the years, and, you know, there probably always will be. And I doubt they're sitting around worried about what I think or you think. So, you know, that's the only pleasure we'll get out of it.
Joe, you've been gracious with your time. Appreciate you joining us, and congratulations to your Eagles.
Hey, that's right. And go Hogs.
All right. Appreciate it. Joe Lenardi of ESPN. When we come back, Christina Long will join me in studio. But first, a word from our sponsors.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971, committed, professional, versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them right now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. I'm joined in studio now by Christina Long. It's opening day for Razorback Baseball, a doubleheader today, beginning at noon over at Baumwalker Stadium. The second game will start about 30, 45 minutes after the end of the first game. Kind of interesting how they put 30 or 45 minutes. I think it might depend on how long the first game goes. They want to have these games over, you know, before sunset if they can. I don't know that they can, but they don't want to be playing after it gets dark, I think, at least not too much. Nine-inning games. But there is a 10 after 7 inning run rule. So, you know, we'll see if that comes into play. Washington State, we talked about this yesterday with Bubba, Christina, that, and you heard their coach say this earlier this week. They got two players who've ever pitched in a Division I game. And so, you know, we'll see how this goes. But it seems like if Arkansas's bats are on today, that there's a chance that we could see, you know, maybe quite a few runs and maybe one of these run rules come into play.
Yeah, I mean, I think this will be an exciting look for fans at the lineup. I think anytime you can get, it seems like they have an opportunity to get, you know, to generate a lot of offense. Like you said, they only have two pitchers that have thrown in a Division I game, which is, you know, an interesting challenge for Washington State. We also talked to Coach earlier this week about, you know, them having to do pretty much all their prep indoors because it's been, you know, single-digit degrees there all winter. Yep. And how that changes things. And so that's why they're coming down here into Texas to play all their first games, is to actually, you know, try to get some of that, you know, some of that in more and better practice there. But, yeah, I mean, I think for Arkansas, I think it'll be a lot of – it's kind of an audition weekend for some of these, you know positions that are maybe not totally settled, or just for them to figure out what their best options are going to be at some of these spots. You know, we've talked a lot about the four pitchers they're going to be able to try, you know, who's going to be that top three for the weekend rotation. You know, I think this is what the early season's for. I think that Arlington series is always, or I guess I shouldn't call it a series, the Arlington event is always so interesting because they're, you know, you get the level of competition jumps up so much from your usual early season games. So I think Arkansas is probably glad to get this in, you know, before that, as opposed to, you know, next year when they're going to open the season there and times they've opened the season in Arlington against some of those big name teams.
I think they probably wish they were opening the season in Arlington this year.
Yeah.
I mean, look at the weather.
Well, yeah, weather-wise, for sure.
You know, I mean, this one, we've already got the adapted schedule to have a doubleheader today, and then they announced yesterday that they're going to move the Saturday game up by an hour.
And I wonder if that'll even help.
We'll see. I mean, yeah. It's basically it's they're trying to miss the rain so they can miss the snow.
Yeah.
I mean, it's Saturday's forecast does not look real good here. They would like to have a roof right now, I think, for this weekend. What do you expect from this week? When you go into this series, because I don't know that I ever really go into series with expectations, but I know a lot of people do. Is that something that you do? Like, you go in and you say, okay, I'm expecting to see this and this and this.
Not so much in baseball, because I feel like, you know, in football and in basketball, I feel like more so, you know, I go in, and maybe it's because I feel like those sports tend to be covered more with like a prediction mindset. You know, we'll come on and do, for football, we come on and do picks. We'll write up our, you know, it feels more like, okay, you're predicting the outcome a little bit more. I don't do that so much with baseball just because I guess it's just, you know, it's more games. There's so much more at play, I feel like. There's kind of some, you know, not luck, but a certain amount of luck. And so I think I don't necessarily go in. I don't feel like that's how I watch baseball usually. I think especially early in the season. I feel like the only expectation I have is for them to be trying a lot of different things, you know, to see different, you know, them trying different things in the lineup throughout the weekend with those four games, with, you know, a doubleheader, potentially another one. Mm-hmm. You know, I think my expectation is a little bit of wait and see kind of stuff, which is kind of the opposite. But no, I don't usually go into baseball games with a particular, I guess, outcome in mind, or even necessarily, you know, there's kind of some things I'm watching for, I guess, but mm-hmm. not necessarily, you know, if there's a trend happening, okay, does the trend continue? But I don't think, you know, for a first weekend, that's not really the case for me.
There's a lot of excitement, at least kind of in the crowd that I follow social media wise about this. You know, I was thinking college baseball's never been stronger. It is a really healthy sport right now. And the level of interest in the sport continues to grow every year. You know, I wrote this week that for the Razorbacks, they sold 8,365 season tickets to Baum Walker Stadium this year. That's a record that beat last year's record, that beat the year before's record, that beat the year before's, and that just keeps going on. 21, they didn't have a record number of tickets sold because they had to cap capacity for much of that season. But you know, in 2020, it was a record, and that beat the. And it's amazing how it just continues to get stronger and stronger. And there's something about college baseball fans, and that's, and this is not to take anything away from the other sports, but the fans, like the diehard fans of college baseball, are as passionate and as loyal as any sport you'll find. Like, it's going to be 45 degrees over there today, and I'm looking out the window right now, and it doesn't look like a baseball day. No. I mean, it's very gray outside. But you know there's going to be this core group of supporters who are going to be there, because they're there whenever, wherever. Doesn't matter if it's here or in Arlington or in Hoover or wherever they play. Like, there's this core group of people that are there, you know, rain, sleet, or shine. We may see a little bit of that, all that this week.
Yeah, honestly. It's interesting because, you know, and I'm not a huge, I don't follow a lot of professional baseball very closely, but, you know, I feel like there's been so much anxiety around professional baseball over the last few years about, you know, ratings declining or fan or attendance declining and the popularity of Major League Baseball, and they're trying to do all these things. You know, they're worried about the game itself not being very popular, so they're trying to speed it up, they're trying to alter it, they're trying to do all these things to make the sport of baseball more appealing. So it's interesting that college baseball, you know, especially, you know, it is a little different at this, you know, at Arkansas. It's not, you know, in the SEC, it's not really like that everywhere, but it's interesting to see it being just as popular as it always has been, you know, consistently popular, growing in popularity, you know, because, you know, Major League Baseball is wondering, do people even like baseball, mm-hmm. really? So it's interesting that, you know, at the college level, that it is still, there's growth and consistency there.
I mean, it's, like I said, it's as popular as it's ever been. I don't think anybody would doubt that at all. I want to tell you, you can get the latest breaking news on all Razorback sports at wholehogsports.com. Most in-depth source for all Razorback sports, analysis, latest in recruiting, unique stories on all your favorite teams. Subscribe today at wholehogsports.com. Gabe Gackle will throw game one for the Razorbacks today. Zach Root will throw game two. It'll be the first time that we've seen Zach Root in a game for the Razorbacks. He did pitch a few times, obviously, this preseason in scrimmages. He faced Oklahoma State during an exhibition game back in the fall. This was a really good pitcher at East Carolina a year ago. East Carolina is a program that's got real good pitching. I mean, they've got a lineage, I guess, if you will, of pitchers who have come out of there and have done quite well. Trey Yasevich was, I think, a first-round pick out of East Carolina last year. That was the number one pitcher in the rotation. Root was number two. When I was talking to Matt Hobbs in the preseason, one of the things he wanted to make a point to tell me was East Carolina did a really good job with him. And you don't hear coaches always praise the programs that they came from, and so that stood out to me.
Yeah, I'm excited to watch him and Beidelschies later in the weekend. Just, you know, when you have those new faces, it's interesting that they've got these kind of four guys in the mix. Two are back and two are new. And I think, you know, Gackle, it's been so clear, I feel like, since last season that Gackle was going to be the next guy. And it's going to be exciting to see him kind of step into that and to see how he fares early. But it was pretty clear, I mean, even as a freshman last season, that this was going to be, that he was going to take this step forward and kind of be. And that's what Matt Hobbs said when you talked to him. He mm-hmm. said, what do you even say about Gabe Gackle?
Like, I said, you got to say something.
Yes, it's so clear, you know, and they've known it.
That was probably that was kind of a so what we did was when I sat down with Matt for our magazine, we'd just go player by player, and then he'd give me an analysis on each one. And we got to Gabe Gackle. He goes, "What do you even say?" I said, "We got to say something. I need to have something to put here on the page." And so, you know, I mean, obviously Matt was a great quote, and he gave me a good quote on that. But that was kind of a fun moment during that interview. I want to tell you, if you're coming to the games either this weekend or later on this season, some changes in around the ballpark. I wrote about this on our website at wholehogsports.com, but we'll talk about it here. Lot 500, which used to be Lot 99, back in the summer of last year, the university totally overhauled the lot numbers on campus. Like, you know, Lot 56 is now Lot 320, and Lot 44 is now, I think, Lot 300.
I haven't even remembered, like, Lot 56. I don't know what Lot 56 is now.
I park there all the time. 320 through 322.
Sure.
They've got it segmented.
Interesting.
But Lot 99 is for years it has been a free lot right off of Beechwood Avenue, just a little bit to the south of of Baum Walker Stadium. It's not free anymore. It's $5 a day parking. So beware of that. $5 a day plus fees. You can use a Flowbird app, or they've got on the signs there around the ballpark or around the parking lot. I'm sorry. They've got a number that you can text and a code you can text to pay that way. This was not a decision. I asked some people about this this week. This was not a decision that was made by athletics. This is a decision that was made by UA Parking and Transit because they manage that lot. Not only is it a popular lot for baseball games, but it's a popular park and ride lot during the week for students who go to the U of A who may not want to buy a student parking pass. So Lot 500, formerly 99, is now a pay lot, $5 per day if you plan on using that lot. The Baum East parking lot across Razorback from the stadium, that is a scholarship lot for every SEC game. But for the non-conference games, you can park in that lot. They've got some areas where people who don't have scholarship tags can park in the Baum East lot for free. So keep that in mind as well. And then wanted to tell you a little bit about some road work that's going on around Baum, just to be aware of. The interstate in Fayetteville is constantly under construction.
There is always something. Always.
For about 12, 13 years, yeah. There's been something going on. But it's under construction. I don't believe it's a new exit, but it is going. I'm not exactly sure how this works, honestly. I don't want to get too far in the weeds. But between exits 60 and 62, they're building a couple of roundabouts that are going to basically help you get onto the interstate. And eventually it's going to be really nice if you're going to a game at Baum, or, you know, maybe if you park down there for the football games, like I know a lot of people do. They park at Baum and they take the bus up to the to Razorback Stadium. But because of that, the Futrell 18th Street Beechwood area south of the ballpark is a mess, and you can't get through there. It dead ends at some point. So I know that's a very popular exit route for people leaving the games. You can't use that this year. So just keep in mind, you don't want to get back there and have to turn around, that area is no longer going to be able to be used for an exit route away from the stadium.
It's going to be a big headache. going to really make it fun getting in and out there for sure. We have it easy because we're there for a couple hours after the game anyway. But
there's never any traffic when I'm leaving the ballpark.
Exactly. But no, that's going to be a big old headache for everybody involved.
This will be the first year they've got that stoplight outside of the ballpark.
I forgot about that.
At Razorback and 15th. Especially if, like, on a big, like on a Friday night SEC game, mm-hmm. or a Saturday night game, if you drive up, you know, if you're driving down Razorback, I mean, it gets very backed up there. And so I think that stoplight for the big games, they're going to have a police officer out there manually operating the stoplight that'll allow for more traffic flow than they've ever had. But so that'll help a little bit. But just keep that in mind. Parking lot that used to be free, now you have to pay. Maybe a route that used to take to the stadium, you can't take that route anymore.
Let me ask you this. Are there any free parking options now, or was that really?
Well, there's
it?
The Bomb East.
Okay, Bomb East, but only for non-conference. Okay. Yeah.
If you know what you're doing, there's a few places you can park for free. But that's one of those things where let's leave that secret for the locals.
We don't want to blow up anybody's spot.
No. All right. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about what's going on around Razorback World this weekend. But first, a word from our sponsors.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King. We are Soapbox. We are ShopCart. We are design.
Welcome back. Lots going on around the Razorback World this weekend. Seems like about every sport is in season outside of maybe football.
Yeah.
Volleyball not
and
in season.
Pretty soon football will be in
Yeah, you're
going to
have spring
practices.
Football. What would be March 10th?
March is the 10th, first, I believe, yeah.
Yeah, so March 10th is when spring football will begin. April 19th is going to be the spring game over at Razorback Stadium. Just kind of run down everything that's going on this weekend. Obviously, we talked about baseball here this weekend. The Tyson Invitational is also going to be in that little corner of campus this weekend. 25th annual Tyson Invitational. This is always a big deal for track. You get a lot of pros that come in. You get a lot of really good college teams that come in. Wrote an advance for this on our website yesterday. The number of top 25 teams, I mean, I think there's, I don't have an exact number, but I think it's probably somewhere around 7, 8, 9 top 25 teams on both the men's and women's side coming in for this meet this weekend. Arkansas number 2 in the Track and Field Coaches Association ratings index this week. That's just kind of a byproduct, I think, of a couple of teams had good weeks last week when Arkansas was off. Arkansas was number 1 before that point, but the Tyson Invitational, always a big deal. They're going to be those are going to be streamed on SEC Network Plus this weekend. Arkansas also going to send Yassine Abdallah back to Boston, where they seem to have a guy go up there and break the 5,000 record every time. That track in Boston is quickly earning a reputation for becoming a record-setting track.
Is that where they had NCAA's indoors last year?
It is, yeah.
Okay, yeah, because I remember watching that.
It's called
that.
The track at New Balance.
Yes, and it's relative. It's a pretty new facility, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I remember watching, you know, covering that on TV last year, and yeah, it looked like a really great facility. But yeah, it's interesting. They keep sending guys up there, and they keep coming back with the records. It's really funny.
Yeah, so we'll have plenty of track coverage throughout the week on WholeHogSports.com. Gymnastics.
Yeah.
Is in action tonight.
Yeah, they're at Georgia. They I wrote today, there's a story online today about it. They need to start getting some better road scores just for their in service of their national qualifying score, which is something I've been learning about. You know, they're it's normal for your road scores to be lower than your home scores, but it's they need to start putting up some better ones on the road, you know, as they get to kind of the second half of the season. But they've got some injuries, which is tough. But, I mean, I think they have a lot of confidence after, you know, beating Florida. And so it should be a pretty good opportunity for them.
Razorback softball is in Ruston, Louisiana this weekend. Going to play 3 different teams, a total of 5 games at the Louisiana Tech Tournament. They'll play ULM and Louisiana Tech today. No TV for the ULM game. The Louisiana Tech game this evening at 6 o'clock will be on ESPN+. And then no TV the rest of the weekend. They'll play Southern Miss tomorrow. And then they will play Southern Miss and ULM on Sunday. Ethan Westerman will have coverage of that for us. And then there's basketball. Men's basketball at Texas A&M. It's an 11 o'clock tip-off on Saturday morning. A&M number 8 in the country. They've got 2 opportunities here in the next week, and you heard Lenardi talk about this, but you know they've got 2 opportunities here in the next week where Auburn on Wednesday, number 1 team, maybe they're not number 1 depending on how the Alabama game goes this weekend, but still very, you know, highly respected team, and then they get A&M tomorrow. I've got a lot more faith in them being able to win at A&M, I think, than I do at Auburn. Because Auburn has become one of the very, very most difficult places to play, not just in the SEC, but nationally. I don't think they're going to beat A&M, but would I be surprised? I don't think so. I mean, I think they've got a team. They can play with Alabama. They can play with Kentucky and some of these other teams. I think they've got a chance to play with Texas A&M. I talked about this yesterday with Anthony. It feels like they need one more marquee win and just don't mess up anywhere else, and they're probably going to like where they're sitting going into Selection Sunday. And I think tomorrow is a really quality opportunity for them to do that.
Yeah, I think it is. I think, you know, a road game, a ranked opponent, they've got some we've talked a lot about the resume and about the Michigan and the Kentucky wins and how much that helps you. But I think, you know, the remainder of the SEC schedule, you could win, you know, some of the what we would maybe call more winnable games, and it might not necessarily, you know, it gets you to the win threshold, the bare minimum. But, yeah, resume-wise, it might not do that much for you. But a win here would help a ton. It would go a long way, especially with Auburn, because, I mean, I don't expect them to beat Auburn. I think that's going to be really tough. I don't know if I think they're going to get blown out or anything, but I don't necessarily – I'm not expecting, you know – them to scare Auburn too much, I guess. So I think, you know, Texas A&M is kind of their best remaining opportunity at a big, like you said, marquee win. Because you're right. I think Auburn has become such a tough place to play. It's been kind of, you know, I'm sure a lot of other SEC fans hate it, but it's been cool to see Auburn, you know, that program build over the last few years. I've found that just kind of interesting. And, you know, as the whole SEC in basketball has grown, I feel like the rise of Auburn and Alabama and things like that has factored into that significantly. So, but yeah, I mean, I think Auburn, I will probably pencil that in as a loss. And so I think this weekend becomes really critical and is their best opportunity at a big win.
I think Jahni Broom is going to be a really strong or really tough matchup for Arkansas.
Definitely.
Unless they do. Unless he has, you know, his awakening
right
here in the next week. And you heard the TV announcers talking the other day about how John Calipari had kind of challenged him in the shoot-around before the LSU game. He gave effort, and it's not to say he hasn't given effort, you know, before, but you could certainly see there was effort there Wednesday night. I think the foot injury has just
– yeah.
Maybe we just underestimated – we underestimated, no doubt, how bad that foot injury was going to limit him.
Right. Because early in the year, it was like, okay, he's back, but he didn't get to work out that much in the preseason. So he's just kind of getting in shape, getting warmed up, whatever. And then it didn't get all that much better. And so, and it's just the situation that they're in with how short their bench is and how, you know, he has to play through it to an extent. Like they don't really have a choice. And so, yeah, I think it's much more severe than we thought. And, you know, we've seen what happened with, you know, Ivicic with how much, you know, now that he's healthy and feeling better, how he's become even more than what we thought he would be. Mm-hmm. And so it's unfortunate for Adu that this is how it's shaken out, but hopefully, you know, I don't know if he's expected to get healthy during this, you know, over the course of the season. I feel like, you know, you get to the point where nobody's really all the way 100%. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how, if you start behind, how you're going to get there.
Well, you know, and you made a good point about Ivicic, and I mentioned Nellie Davis yesterday talking about, think about what the conversation was about him and how he wasn't anything like whatever, you know, he had been at FAU. And then over the last five or six games, all of a sudden it's like, okay, well, that's kind of what you expected to see from him. Same thing with the Ivicic. I think he is – you would have had to have been maybe his parents to think that he was going to play at this level. Nobody else expected that. And, you know, so, I mean, he has really turned it on, I think, probably since Boogie Fland went out. Mm-hmm. That's whenever you really saw him starting to come along. And, you know, he had an ankle injury and he came along. So I think because you've seen it from Nelly and because you've seen it from Ivicic, there is optimism that you might see it from Adu. There's a data point there, though, of how bad is the foot.
Right. Anthony had some really good thoughts on the show earlier this week about Big Z and about kind of how it's a product of him being healthier and also, you know, the whole conversation right now about are they better without Boogie Fland, and it's not necessarily because Boogie Fland was, you know, hurting them on the floor, but more about the roles that they were having to play to fit him in and things like that. And so Anthony was talking about how with Ivicic, it's a lot, he's being asked to do a different play a different role now than he was before. Before it was, he was being asked to do a lot of different things and it kind of depended on the game and it didn't really feel like they knew quite what to do with him or how to best use him. And now it feels like they've found that. And so I think the consistency there for him has helped a lot.
Women's basketball team lost 89-50 to Ole Miss last night. I mean,
it's bad.
It's really bad. I mean, every loss except for one, they lost to Georgia last weekend, has been by 20 points or more in SEC play. Most of them have been by 30 points or more.
Yeah.
It's the good news is they don't have to play for a week. The bad news is when they come back, they have to go to South Carolina.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's not going well.
No, it's a tough year for them over there. They dropped to 9-18, 2-10 in SEC play last night. Got any big Valentine's Day plans?
We celebrated last night. Since I'll be covering gymnastics remotely tonight, we went out to Italian food in Bentonville, and it was great. But yeah, that was our big thing. Are you guys Valentine's Day people?
No.
I figured you weren't. It's baseball time for you.
No, I've never been a big Valentine's Day person.
I've always liked it. I don't feel strongly about it either way.
Here's
it's
the deal
fine.
For us. We've got Christmas, and then we've got our anniversary is 10 days after Christmas.
Oh, uh-huh.
And then my wife's birthday is like 2 weeks after that. Come Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
We're done celebrating.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, let's just move on.
Yeah. Yeah. I've never like.
And then you got the baseball component.
Right. Right. Even as a kid, I was never big on Valentine's Day. It was fine, but I don't hate it, but I don't love it either. It's just fine. It's an excuse to like go do something, I guess. But
it's my parents' anniversary,
oh,
so
nice.
That's what I've always associated
yeah.
with Valentine's Day more than than anything else. I was thinking, not real thought through, but I wanted to like put some, like you see these different social media accounts that make Valentine's
yes.
Day cards.
Yeah, I haven't seen any yet today. I've been waiting to.
Yeah,
there's
well,
always some funny ones.
I was thinking like what ones could we make?
Ooh. We have to come up with some real good, some good
like
puns.
Find someone who looks at you like Taylen Green looks at Andrew Armstrong.
Oh my God.
Something like that.
It's Taylen Green and Andrew Armstrong on a Valentine together. I only have eyes for you.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my God.
So.
Yeah. I'm trying to think if there's any like name puns you could do with different people. I'd have to think about it. But I always love, that's like my favorite part about Valentine's Day is people coming up with really clever yeah. ones for that.
Yeah. You know what I mean, though.
Yeah. Oh, I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
So, I think everybody knows what we're talking about. Who's Taylor going to throw to this year? All right. We appreciate you being with us. Hope we'll see you at our website this weekend, wholehogsports.com. We'll have coverage of everything going on. Anthony Christensen's in College Station with our photographer, Hank Layton. They'll have coverage from this Arkansas-Texas A&M basketball game. I'll be out at Baum all weekend. Ethan will be at Tyson Invitational. I know you'll be over there one day too. Got gymnastics, got softball. We're going to have it all covered for you at our website, wholehogsports.com. We'll be back with another podcast on Monday. We expect that we'll have Dane Bradshaw on Monday. He's calling the game tomorrow at College Station, and he's scheduled to join us on Monday to talk about what we see from Arkansas and Texas A&M. Hope we see you at our website this weekend. And if not, we'll see you on our podcast Monday. Have a great weekend, everyone.